What's good, everyone? Welcome back to My First Kicks. This is episode 168, and this week I welcome Tony Mew to the podcast. Yo, this is wild. Very lucky to have him on. I was pestering him for a little bit. I was trying to be like, yo, come on. But I ran into him at the Extra Butter event for the Kyrie Kai ones for Anta. Chopped it up. And he apparently thought I'd live somewhere else. So now we are here. We have an episode. This was recorded before the Iffy episode. So if you're looking for like continued jokes from that episode, I'm sorry. Just a heads up. But this was actually supposed to come out before. But Iffy dropped the picture of the podcast of me and him in studio, and I was like, all right, I guess we got to drop it next week. So we are here, the Tony Mew episode. It's absolutely wild. I can't believe I got him. We got to talk about his time at Complex. We got to talk about just people taking chances on him taking a chance on himself, him breaking down his videos and why he does things his way, and very insightful. You know, we don't really touch a lot on content. We definitely talk about how I'm starting to get back into playing basketball again, because I am definitely trying to get on that Wash Club floor to play a little ball. But I don't know if that invite's gonna ever reach me in my emails. But hopefully when this episode drops and he hears this, he thinks about me when somebody drops out. So real quick, I definitely wanted to touch on my April Fool's joke and saying that I sold the podcast to Complex. That is an absolute joke lie, because I did not think it was going to get as crazy as it did. For Brendan Dunn to just jump on and co-sign the post, and everybody else was like, yo, congrats. Like, it was just really funny. It was really cool to see how many people were excited for me, and then also excited that I was able to work at Complex with Complex and dropping the podcast. Very interesting, very fun. And now shout out to everybody who listened, to the maybe new listeners that didn't know about this podcast and now are listening to this because of that post. Shout out to y'all. Thank you for jumping in on the deep end, because there's 167 episodes that you got to catch up on. And I've had some great guests. I've had Jock Slade. I've had Nick DePaula, Nick Engvall. I've had Mo Christine, and I've got many, many more to come. So hopefully you'll stick around for the ride. But on to where you can find Tony. You can find him at Tony MUI. Oh, no, at Mr. Tony MUI. Yeah. And also, which will be in the link of this podcast, a link to his website and his YouTube page, where a lot of his content is on there. I think it's very cool, you know. He mixes it up. He talks a lot about sneakers, basketball, food. One of my favorite clips that he's done is, and we talk about, is the Cheetos Puma collaboration that he put together, the video that he put together. Some cool stuff, and really hope that you guys check him out. You guys enjoy this episode. And also, you know where to find me, or maybe you don't know where to find me, but I am Who Is Haas on all social medias. Follow the podcast at My First Kicks Pod. Follow the podcast on TikTok and YouTube at My First Kicks. If you have a My First Kick story and you want me to read it to a guest that I have on the podcast, hit me up, myfirstkickspod@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on Friday, do you think Cody's going to finish the story? I'm in full WrestleMania mode. So shout out to all my listeners that also watch wrestling, especially you, Shock Jig. Shout out to y'all. It's WrestleMania weekend, and Maybe Cody finishes the story. Maybe Cody doesn't. But I'm rocking my fourth rope gear in this intro, and I'm excited. So, and I'm excited for you to listen to this episode. So, on to my conversation with Tony.
Hey, Tony, welcome to the podcast.
Appreciate you having me.
Nah, man, big honor. You know, I've been following you for years, let's say. I'm gonna go with years. I don't know exactly when, but Life of Conflicts, I remember watching you for, like, you made my afternoons at work so much easier.
You know, respect, man, because, yeah, I'm not even going to lie. I have to give myself a pat on the back. You know, it's been years since I've, you know, left Complex. Mm-hmm. I left in 2021, mm-hmm. So it's been about 3 years, and I haven't made an episode of Life at Complex because there was that period of the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. So technically my last episode was probably 2029. No, yeah.
2029, he was in the future?
Yeah, in the future. 2019.
Yeah.
So it's been about 5 years since mm-hmm. I made an episode of Life at Complex. And the other day, I kid you not, this person on the company I'm currently with right now, yeah. This person hit me on Slack and said, "Oh my God, I knew I recognized you, you know, Life at Complex. I used to watch that, you know, during my college days and blah, 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 blah." I'm like, damn, people, it must have really had an impact on people. I honestly didn't really look at it that way. I was just more so trying to document my day mm-hmm. so that I could look back on it and, you know, kind of reflect on all the cool jobs that I had. Mm-hmm. Originally it was a pet project that I was working on, and
yeah.
It just, you know, right place, right time. They gave me the opportunity to make more episodes. So, you know, it just blew up to something bigger than I thought it would be.
I mean, the reason why I got to give you your props is because, so there's the episode where Joe Buttons pulls up, right? And
like that episode got a lot of people hooked on.
But I'm gonna say this. So like there was a Hot Ones drop where they did a donut collaboration, right? So I went to the drop. I mentioned that episode. And since then, the whole team, the whole Hot Ones team remembers me because I talked about that one episode of Life at Complex to them.
That's crazy.
And they were like, "Oh yeah, you're an OG Spice Lord. Like you're one of the first." And I was like, I guess I am. So now every time like Chris Schoenberger will say what's up, or like Sean, I had Sean, like I talked to Sean at ComplexCon last year. He was just, every time I run into him, he's always like, "Yo, what's up, Haas?" And I was just like, it's wild. It's wild that you know me like this. And it's just because that's of that episode.
Well, I will say, so mm-hmm. when Joe Budden blew up, that was the old office, not the old office. Because right, there was another office before that. That was at the Time and Life building, and that was inception or the creation of Hot Ones. Mm-hmm. I still remember that studio to today. As a matter of fact, there I have a hard drive of just B-roll footage of that office mm-hmm. when everyone packed up their things and was getting ready to move to Times Square, which that's where their current location is at.
Yeah.
And I still have a ton of that B-roll. And, you know, once in a while, I'll dig through the archives and I'll reflect back on all those memories that I had in that office. It's crazy.
So then I worked in that same building. I worked at Time Inc. at the time. Yeah. So this is super only for people who've worked in this building. But how crazy was that Benio on Wednesdays?
Well, okay. So I'm assuming you're mentioning Wednesdays because the president was. Are we on the same wavelength in terms of what I'm saying?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Wait, you say Wednesday. Okay, Wednesdays. Okay, there was a lot of like after parties being thrown.
No. I'm talking about the cafe in Time and Life building. Yeah.
To be honest with you, I never went to that cafe.
Oh, man, you missed out, bro. Wednesdays, they would have Latin food, and you'd get like Benil and like tostones for like 10 bucks. And me and my boys, we would fill it up, and it was crazy.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that because, yeah, when you're working in a media company, time flies like that.
And oh,
you
don't
have traditional lunch hours where you might be eating lunch at 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I never really had the chance to like actually have a decent time for lunch. Mm-hmm. But I thought you were referring to President Bill Clinton being in the elevator.
Oh, nah. No, that never happened to me.
Yo, that happened a lot of times. In that specific building, so many of my colleagues were telling me, "Oh, Bill Clinton just was in the elevator with Secret Service." Like, what the hell? So that's what I thought you were referring to. But then once you didn't catch on to that, then I thought you were talking about all these happy hours that Complex threw, and I thought you were one of the people that were invited to the happy hours.
Okay. I was a pup working at Time and Life, Time Inc. I was working for Travel and Leisure at the time. I was working on like five different magazines, like working with ads and like print, like the actual magazine. So like I was working in print. So
okay, what floor was that?
I know Complex was on like three. It was like one floor, right? It was like one or two floors.
Yeah, two floors. But I forgot the numbers.
Yeah,
it was like 23rd floor, and then the other one was like the 29th floor or something. I forgot.
We were like Time and Life, I think, was a good majority of the entire building until they started selling it off when I was there. And then when Complex came in, it was like this whole crazy shift because it was like they were like, oh, we're going out of business. And then shortly after Complex came into that building, and I lost my job. So, yeah.
Wait, so what? So I got to Complex in 2016.
Okay. I lost my job in 2016 too. I think so.
Okay. Dang, man. Shoot.
But before, because Complex was there, I will tell you how I know is because I met Mark Echo in the lobby one time.
Okay.
And so
I wasn't familiar with how many years they've been there since I joined.
Yeah, because I remember the only reason I know they weren't, because I was working at Time Inc. when Sean did the video of him doing the Rock's diet, and it was at the other building. It was the first building. So, yeah.
Okay.
Which was on like on the west side, I think.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar. I think it was on like 23rd Street or something like that. But yeah, wow, man, damn. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it was like before I joined, but I'd imagine nobody's really documenting or giving the public.
No, everybody definitely, like during that time, I want to say people in the culture, because like that was still when people in sneaker and streetwear culture were prevalent of being like online. I mean, the start of Complex and all that helped with that, helped like feed that and continue to fuel it. So a lot of people were like, yo, I want to work there. And you making these videos were piquing everybody's interest because they were like, yo, I wish I could work there. And now you're like, this is what it's like to work here. And people are like, oh my God, now I really want to work here. Like, yeah. Cause I was watching it being like, all right, when is there a job opening? Like immediately always putting in every single, like resume as I could after watching an episode.
Well, I would like to say this and peel the curtain back. So me and you both know working at Complex, it's not like what you see in the video.
No, yeah.
Right? Because there is an entertainment factor or element to those videos. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to show you people just typing away at a computer. Nobody wants to watch that. So for me, it was more of a challenge of, how do I make this entertaining every episode? And sometimes, you know, obviously I'll improvise. And by the way, I took a ton of improv classes. Shout out to all the theaters that I went to that taught me all the skills, how to think on my feet and pivot and all that stuff. You know, sometimes you just look around the office, or sometimes maybe the Oscars would be on a Sunday, and then the following Monday, that's when you get the coworkers' reactions to what happened last night. And, you know, then you'll cater an entire episode around the Oscars that Monday. And then Tuesday, that's when you publish the episode. So, you know, a lot of it is just coming up with entertaining content, not being corny about it, but also like, you know, still being organic, authentic, and timely with it. So I feel like a lot of those episodes, even though people are watching it and like, oh man, I want to work for Complex. This is how it's going to be like working there. It's really not. It's just me, you know, putting this, I don't know, this idea out into the world that this is how it is. But really, it's just my idea. You know, it's not true to life. I mean, I hate to put it like that because it sounds like, you know, I'm faking the funk, but it's really not.
No, I mean, I've always took it as more of just like a highlight reel of like what the craziness that happens, or like, you know, you would go to people's desk and be like, yo, what are you wearing today? And then you'd make a whole compilation of that. Like, I took it more like that. I still think, you know, it's still, I think you maybe brought in a lot of people through the door with your videos. Like, you know, it's accredited to that. I don't think people are expecting Joe Budden's running through the office screaming every single day, because then no work would get done.
Well, for sure, I have to give, you know, the upper management a lot of kudos, because they gave me the opportunity to even do that stuff. Because if they didn't give me the green light to do all that, I probably wouldn't go up to my coworkers and say, oh, yeah, what are you rocking today? Right. I'd probably be in front of a computer just working away. Mm-hmm. So for them to trust me and give me the freedom to create, I felt like that was a huge roadblock that was cleared. And, you know, even though I departed from Complex, I still, you know, appreciate the opportunity that they gave me to even have that platform to showcase my skills. So, you know, shout out to them for sure.
No, yeah, and it's crazy to where you are now. But you're here to, and I'm going to hard pivot. You're here to answer the question that I ask everybody each week. And that question is, what's your first kicks? What's that first pair of sneakers you absolutely needed to have?
Absolutely needed to have? Oh, yeah. I'll answer this by saying the first pair of sneakers that I can look back on and say, oh yeah, that was a dope pair of sneakers that I first got, was a pair of Air Max Uptempo 97s. Mm-hmm. You might have to Google that. It's a black and red pair. I believe Scottie Pippen wore those back then. Obviously, when we were kids, mm-hmm. you probably weren't buying Jordans like that. Unless, of course, your parents were sneakerheads, then like you probably got hooked up with all the J's and all that stuff. But I didn't. My parents are immigrants, so they took me to a Modell's. I think Modell's is out of business now. They're Dunskies. So they took me to a Modell's, and usually when you're a kid, you probably don't get to buy sneakers every month. You probably only get to buy once a month, right? Mm-hmm. And when you do go buy sneakers, you're probably buying them on discount, or you're probably buying two pairs, both on discount, mm-hmm. and then you store one away so that you don't have to go back to the sneaker store. So I remember my dad took me to a Modell's, and it was a huge discount. And I bought two pairs of sneakers that day, the Air Max Uptempo 97s and the black and red. But they were a half size too small for me. But they were so fire that I crammed my foot in there. And if you know anything, when you're a child, mm-hmm. you start having that growth spurt, it's almost like a double reverse on your foot. Not only is it too small for you, but your foot is growing.
Your dad didn't touch the front, didn't pull the like, oh no.
He did, but then it's almost like, well, they ask you, right? Hey, is this enough room? Like, does it feel good? And obviously you're lying, right? Because you really want the shoes.
Yeah.
Obviously I asked the employee, hey, do you have my actual size? And they said, no, we have a half size smaller. Mm-hmm. You could try it out on. When you're a sales employee and you're talking to a kid, right, you're trying to get that sale. Right? Mm-hmm. So as a kid, I'm just like, yeah, let me get that. Right? So I put it on. It was tight, but I played it off like, yeah, no, it fits good. So I had those. I still had a beat up pair of shoes that were currently on my feet. And then the other pair that I bought was a Fila Shockwave.
Fila Shockwave.
And that was a pair that Jerry Stackhouse wore, I believe. And that was actually a bulkier shoe. Mm-hmm. It had a lot more space. And I remember it too. I was in the sixth grade going to seventh. And usually sixth grade, once you graduate sixth grade, that's no longer elementary school. Mm-hmm. So now you have to start to turn on your cool, right?
Right, right.
You actually have to start being somebody. Mm-hmm. And I remember, man, I had to tell my mom, I need to throw away these beater shoes. I need to start putting those Air Maxes on. I put them on. I go to school. Oh, I got so many compliments. So many compliments. But, oh, man, my foot was swollen at the end of the day. And then I kept starting. I kept growing. Mm-hmm. And then it just became unbearable that one day, obviously, when we were kids, we would do everything in a PE mm-hmm. class. Mm-hmm. Go play in the playground, just wear them casually, everything, right? You beat them up, you don't even clean them. So
how much tag did you play in those?
Oh, I played so much. But my foot was hurting, though. But, you know, you're a kid, you're running off of adrenaline, you just keep going through it.
Yeah.
But I remember one day I was having so much pain. I think I took like a scissor and I went inside the shoe and I poked a hole where my pinky toe is at. Because I needed some relief, but also I felt like I got enough wear out of them.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a full calendar year yet. Mm-hmm. Usually your parents will make you wear for a full year before you can even throw them out.
Mm-hmm.
I put a hole in them just so that I can have the excuses, the excuse to throw it away and wear the Shockwave pair. So, yeah, I had to scrap that pair, but that was my first kicks.
So I couldn't find the Shockwaves. Like it's apparently the Fila Shockwaves are non-existent even on the internet. But I tried. But let me read a little synopsis of the Air Max Uptempo 97. This is the black colorway. This is the re-release from 2018. Blending Nike's basketball heritage with their innovative Nike Air Max technology from the 90s, the Air Max Uptempo 97 appears in a triple black rendition constructed with nubuck and leather panels on the upper. The shoe also sports a mesh tongue for breathability. Retro Air Max and Uptempo branding appear on the tongue and heel, while midsole incorporates a full-length Air Max cushioning unit. Pearlized accents are included for a 90s nostalgia aesthetic. Yeah, I didn't even know these re-retroed in 2018.
Yeah, I think they came out like twice or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think like 2010 and then maybe like 2018, something like that.
These are clean, very clean.
Yeah, but okay, so to answer your question, that was the first pair that I remember, mm-hmm. the first good pair I remember having.
Yeah.
The pair that I really wanted was the Reebok Question Red Toes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really started getting into basketball once I hit the seventh grade. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Iverson was...
That was your guy?
You're the man. Him and white chocolate. Mm-hmm. So I had to get the Reebok questions.
Did you get the Reebok questions in seventh grade? Like, were you playing ball in them?
No. I was a little bit older by that time. So I think... I didn't get the Reebok questions until maybe like junior year of high school.
Okay. Okay. Was that first job or was it like?
Nah, you know? No. I can't remember if I paid for it or maybe my parents paid for it, but mm-hmm. I know I was working like a summer job. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was my money. I don't know. It's been a minute. So I don't know.
Where are you from originally?
Born and raised in New York.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I mean,
I grew up on the Lower East Side.
Okay. So during that time, I want to say like, I don't know what school you went to. High school? Because I went to high school in the Lower East Side as well. I went to Washington Irving. So I always tell everybody knows it on here as Hell High because that's what it was called in the newspapers for years. I don't know if we're the same age, but yes, that's where I went. So that's a lot of my influences. So, but like, what was your high school like and what high school did you go to?
Okay. I went to Murray Bertram High School.
Okay.
Where we had the most dominant girls basketball.
Yes. Team. I was just going to say, I forgot her name. 100 point game, right? Was it close?
I mean, yeah, that was cool and all, but yeah, best believe every year we were at Madison Square Garden playing mm-hmm. for the chip. Mm-hmm. And you know, the school is flooded with just girl championship banners. But yeah, Murray Bertram High School, what was high school like for me? So Murray Bertram is pretty close to Chinatown.
Yeah.
It's in City Hall right across the street from the police plaza. Mm-hmm. And there was a good amount of diversity there, but it was also right next to the projects as well. So I guess Murray Bertram was a lot of like finding yourself, trying to be cool, trying to fit in. I don't even know what sneakers I had. I know I had the Reebok questions, but I had some Team Jumpmans.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I had with the zipper going all the way up. It kind of looked like the Air Jordan 15s. Yeah,
Every time I've ever heard of a Team Jordan, all I could think about is that, like, it looks like the, what's the one that looks like a 13 or a 4? No, a 13.
I know what you're talking about. It had like the two pods on the side. Kind of looked like, I know what you're talking. That's like one of the most popular Team Jordan models. High school was pretty cool for me. I was pretty much like a class clown, but I was still good with the books. So, you know. I did my thing in high school, man. What can I say?
I used to go to Chinatown Fair a lot. So I knew a bunch of the kids that went to
one of those arcade players, huh?
Yeah, I was the nerdy kid in high school.
I stayed away from the arcades because I know that's where all the gangs go. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, nah, I'm good with that. I just went after school and went straight to the courts.
Yeah.
That's where you got me.
Where did you when did you start picking up basketball, and were you playing basketball? Like, because I mean, you talk about going to the courts, but like, were you on teams? Like, and you go into a very basketball known school too, so like, were you on the courts there as well?
I never played high school or college basketball. For a team, at least. I was way too small, malnutrition, malnourished. And also it was a confidence thing, right? It's almost like, damn, you're not even 6 feet tall. How are you gonna compete? I guess I really didn't have that dog in me, like people like to say. But I did still try to hone my craft during pickup games and stuff like that. So I started playing basketball in elementary school, but you didn't really take it serious until you hit seventh grade. Mm-hmm. Once I hit seventh grade, started learning how to dribble between my legs. Once you hit that first between the leg, that first tween, you're just like, oh man, I got the ball on a string right now. Yeah,
nobody can guard me now.
And then you start learning how to do behind the back. And then when you do behind the back consecutively, you start not looking down when you dribble. You start looking forward. You're just like, oh, wow. Now my arms are longer. My hands are bigger. I can actually control the rock. So, I would play at different parks. Just try to test myself to see if I could actually hang with the people at these local parks. I remember there was a year that I kind of went all around the city. Obviously, I was nervous and – you go to certain parks, you're the only Asian person there. They're probably like, yo, you better be nice or you just lost somewhere.
I got to know what names they've called you, because they definitely not calling you Tony.
Obviously, like back then, there was no Jeremy Lin. Yeah. So, and back then, Yao Ming wasn't even in the league. There was no Asian players in the league back then. They would probably just call you Jackie Chan.
I knew he was going to say Jackie Chan, because I definitely heard somebody say that, yo.
I mean, it is what it is. Like Cam and May say, it is what it is, man. Yeah. What can you do? As long as you earn the respect, that's all I really care about. And also, getting some wins, man, holding your own.
I mean, New York basketball is and was, I don't know if it still is, a different beast, minus outside of that guy in the Timbs that's always like challenging people on West 4th. But
the Messiah.
Yeah, the Messiah. I saw him at the mall one day. I was like, is that the Messiah? And I was just like, I'm glad I'm not around the court.
Too much for me, man. It feels like it's not as authentic. It's almost like he just has a temper at that point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's weird. I don't know. I feel like, because I used to, well, I work by West 4th now, so I'll walk by the cages whenever I get a chance, and there's always people playing ball, but I've never actually played ball in the cages, and I'm too scared.
I played it once, never again. it's almost like you can't get any flow to it. It's just straight, every play, argument. They're arguing about the score, literally just yelled out the score the previous play, and then now they're making up a fake score. I'm like, what are you doing, man? No flow to it.
Man, that's wild. What's the, like, the, I guess, what's the wildest game you've played on like, NBA, and like, I was going to say NBA, but I'm in New York street courts.
Wildest as in, yeah. All right, I'll tell you a story.
Mm-hmm.
So I was playing at a park. I don't want to mention the park because, you know, it might make it too hot, but I was playing at a park and my friend was there as well. Mm-hmm. And it was just a bunch of people on a court shooting around. Then all of a sudden, some dude in a wearing jeans shows up to the court. Mm-hmm. Clearly not a hooper, but you know, he just wanted to shoot around. So then we didn't have enough, right? I wasn't playing. I was just on the sidelines. I'm just like, yeah, I took it. It was one of those days where you just like walking around the city and you're just chilling and you don't want to get sweaty and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I go to the park. I'm just chilling. I see my friend there. He's in hoop attire. He's ready to, like, you know, get a sweat in and just get some buckets.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have enough. So they asked the guy who was shooting around. Everyone's on the same court. Guy with the jeans. Asked him to play because you needed even numbers. Mm-hmm. So they start playing. The guy clearly doesn't play basketball. As a matter of fact, the guy plays another sport. And he fouls my friend. My friend didn't call it. You know, just keep going.
Yeah.
Then my friend, you know, fouls him, not on purpose. Just, mm-hmm. you know, you're playing basketball, right? Sometimes you foul somebody. It's accidental.
Right.
So the guy doesn't know the rules of basketball. So he's thinking my friend is like, doesn't like him. So he pushes my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And then my friend was like, yo, what are you doing? What's your problem, right? It's like, yo, it's like one of these, right? It's like, mm-hmm. light smack on the hand.
Mm-hmm.
But then the guy pushes my friend and my friend's like, yo, what are you doing? What's your problem? So the guy in jeans takes this as disrespect. He's like, yo, jeez. Why are you talking back to me? Like, you don't know who the fuck I am.
Uh-huh.
And then my friend's like, because I don't know who you are. Like, hey, we were just playing basketball. So the guy goes to the sideline, reaches into his duffel bag, whips out a knife. And he starts wheeling it at my friend. And my friend's putting on the jets. He's running, like, around the park. And everybody just, like, stunned. We're like, what the fuck is this? How did we escalate so quickly to playing basketball to trying to get cut up?
That's crazy. Yeah,
that was the wildest thing I've ever seen. I was like, what is this? This is crazy. Turns out the dude with the jeans was a gang member.
Uh-huh.
And he really took it as disrespect that my guy was talking back to him. When clearly it's like, hey, you foul somebody, all right, you check up, you get the ball back, right? It's
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Just like accidental contact. That was the craziest story I've ever seen.
That is wild. I wouldn't even know. It definitely reminds me of White Men Can't Jump, where he's like, you know what? I'm going to go get my gun. And then everybody runs.
I'm like, yo, this is like escalated so quickly. And obviously the guy, so all this resolved back because, like, the gang member knew a mutual friend of my friend.
Oh.
Eventually, they was just like, yeah, it was a misunderstanding. And then they're cool now. I mean, they're not cool, but it's like, it's not on site.
Yeah, yeah.
Way, way back. So obviously now they're like grown adults and I'm pretty sure they know better. Or maybe the other guy's just like, I don't know what happened to the other guy.
Lifer. He was just like, I'm in it.
I don't know.
So you talked about your love for the Iversons, but like, since then, where does your sneaker history go? Like, do you just stick to basketball sneakers or do you evolve past that? Like, does your collection get crazy? You know what I mean?
I mean, collection definitely gets crazy. But, you know, I always go back to my roots and that's always basketball. Mm-hmm. Sure, there's a lot of hype sneakers now. You know, anytime a Supreme collab comes out or a Travis Scott sneaker comes out, yeah, we're in the social media age now, so you have to pay attention to that stuff. But do I necessarily want it? Not so much. I'd rather have, like, you know, a Devin Booker shoe. I mean, obviously, you give me the choice to have both, I'll take them both. But, you know, I care more about a basketball shoe than a lifestyle shoe at this point.
Mm-hmm. So. What, like, are you, because I know you play a lot of ball. I mean, we talked about just you playing ball right now. So are you more, because I'm a lot influenced by Nightwing and Cousteau when it comes to, like, sure. like that type of like review of a sneaker. So are you buying off of, you know, what the shoe feels like on your foot, or are you like looking at different technologies? Because that's what piqued me when it comes to basketball sneakers. It's always about what's that next tech that's going to help me, I mean, not break ankles, but stay on the court longer is what I look at it like.
No, I don't really necessarily look at the new tech. Obviously, I'm curious about the new tech, right? Anytime like a Jordan, I don't know, next one is Jordan 39s. When the Jordan 39 comes out, I'm curious about how they feel, you know, what improvements they made from the 38s to the 39s. Mm-hmm. But more so for me, it's more about what's the next signature shoe? Mm-hmm. Like Luka is going to come out with the Luka 3s. What's that like? Mm-hmm. Right? How's it going to look? How's it going to perform on the court? Stuff like that really pulls me more towards the sneaker, having that signature athlete. I feel like nowadays it's all about signature shoes now, right? Mm-hmm. People or consumers would much rather have a name attached to it than a inline sneaker. Mm-hmm. Like nobody's really buying like Puma All Pro Nitros, but they might buy a Puma Melo Ball 3.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Or nobody's really buying an Anta shoe, but they might buy a Kyrie Anta. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So I think it's the athlete. Athletes are the product now. That's why like a lot of brands are trying to sign a lot of these athletes.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah. I mean, they're not really making a standalone shoe. I mean, I like the Nike GT cut, but it's like, it's more of like, I like it the way it, I liked it because of the way it looked. And I was just like, all right, this looks cool. But then I watched like Nightwing's review of it. And I was just like, all right, I'm not going to spend $210 for this. If I can get it for like $70, I'll cop it, you know?
Yeah. And I understand why brands do that too, because not every athlete is going to get a signature shoe. So you have to have the athlete wearing a Nike product. Mm-hmm. And it has to be a new, innovative Nike product. So I understand, like, sometimes they have to make a GT cut because what's Jordan Poole going to wear? He can't just keep wearing Kobe retros.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Kobe's going to sell themselves.
Yeah.
But we need to make more money selling inline.
Yeah. It's wild. I mean, we met at the Kyrie Anta event at Extra Butter, and I played ball in the Kyrie this past Saturday. So, I mean, you got to.
Indoors or outdoors?
Huh? What happened?
Indoors or outdoors?
Indoors. I only play indoor ball now. Because
okay, I respect it.
I had ankle surgery 3 years ago from an accident from playing ball. And so I was just like, no more outdoor ball for me. Like, unless I'm just like practicing, I'm not going to be going full court 44 hours outside in concrete. I can't do it no more. It's over. I'm retired.
Okay, let me ask you two questions.
Yeah, yeah.
How'd you like the sneakers? And also, what's your game like?
My game is washed because I haven't picked up a ball in like 3 years. So
I need an NBA comparison.
All right, I'll come back to that. The shoe is extremely light, which I was taken aback from, right? Because like, so my normal ball kicks are between a pair of Linsanity Hyperdunks and also the...
Wow, this man really said Linsanity.
Yes, yes. That's what I love to ball in. I like that shoe a lot. And and the Kobe NXT ADFFs. That's the one with the... You can pull tab them.
Wow.
And, yeah. And so, to be honest, that Kyrie felt like a combination of the two. Because like the NXT ADFFs have... like it's not a thick sole, it's a thinner sole, and it's light. So I'm just like, all right, these are nice. So I've been playing ball in that, and then when I put on the Hyperdunks, it's more of just like I feel more bounce to it. So if I put the two of like having cushion and also that like lightness, I got the Kyrie, and I was just like, I played ball on them Saturday, and I was just like, yo, these are great. I love the traction on it. And which I think suffers with the Kobe's, but I also get the traction on the Hyperdunks. But yeah, I mean, I'm one of these dudes that like I buy more basketball kicks, but like I try to make sure I get them on sale just so I can put them through the ringer when I play ball in them. And then if I don't like it in the first couple of wears, I'm like, all right, man, it's over for these. Like I have a pair of Why Nots, the I think they're like the threes, the 0.003s. Okay. I hate the way he numbers the sneakers, but those were like, I put those on and my pinky toe was hurting immediately. And I was just like, so yeah. And in my game, I will say my game is New York Knick legendary.
Noah Harrington.
No, I'm gonna give you one worse.
You can get worse than Othella Harrington.
I thought he was bad. Mike Sweetney.
Oh yeah, you suck, man. What's going on, man? Where your game at?
It's because before I had ankle surgery, I was working freelance, and so I didn't have health insurance, so I didn't get my ankle looked at until 2 years after. Ooh. So I stayed off of ball. I stayed after I got the injury. I didn't play ball for 2 years, got the ankle surgery during the pandemic. And then I played ball the day before I got ankle surgery. I was just like, all right, I'm gonna play ball the day before. I was just like, whatever. It's already tore up. It's not going to be worse anymore. I'll tell you like the longer version after the episode. And then I played ball, got surgery, came back, and then I also got another surgery. And then that surgery led to my ankle feeling better, and now I'm like, I play ball every Saturday. So yeah, it's like I'm back after not playing ball for almost 5 years, and that's why my game is bad.
Prime. Were you nice in your prime?
I played. I didn't get to play high school ball at all at Washington.
Was at the arcade. I get it.
Yeah, yeah. But also, it's because that team was just trash. Like, there was nobody really playing basketball there, nor did they really have a system. So I was just like, forget it. Like, I didn't even try. And I was trying to get transferred to another school so I could play ball and take ball seriously, and that never happened. So whatever. But I was playing ball excessively in the streets, and but the thing is, the way I grew up, I was always the tallest kid, so I was end up being the center for everything, and all coaches were being like, "No, you got to learn how to play post. You got to learn how to play post." So I have no left hand, right? I still don't have a left hand, and also I just play really like well post game, but like I'm more of a because. Nobody liked passing to me because every time they would pass it to me when I was younger, I was an instant bucket because nobody was taller than me, right? Mm-hmm. So now, whenever I play ball, I'm not. So nobody passes it to me, but I'm playing in the post. And then they're like, oh, no, we're not going to pass it to you. So now I'm a master rebounder. But at the same time, the other thing is that like I have to earn all my buckets. So when I'm finally getting the ball, it's already like I'm either transitioned to go for a post-up move or like I don't have any like in-between game. So, yeah, that's it. People listening probably be like, all right, man, let's invite him to the next game. Let's cook him.
Invite him to the next game, but let him keep getting next.
He's just there to watch.
You got next. You got next.
Don't worry, you know, it's five on, five off, but, you know, we got six right now, so. You know, you got to sit. What's your game like? And
when I was younger, I would like to say my game was like Iverson, uh-huh. But you know, I copied his crossover, that crazy carry,
yeah,
crossover. I practiced going right to left a lot because I'm right-handed, mm-hmm. So that was easier to do. Going left to right was a little bit harder, but then kept getting the reps in, so now I'm able to cross left to right to left with ease. Mm-hmm. But I don't really drive it in anymore. Now that I'm older, I just kind of hang back, spot up shooters. Mm-hmm. That's about it. But when I was younger, try to slap backboard as much as I can. you know, that's almost equivalent to dunking at this point.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I think I played like Iverson back then, but, you know, obviously that's me gassing myself. I'm probably more like a freaking Patty Mills or something like that.
Hey, look, Patty Mills made it to the NBA. He's nice, all right? Anybody in the NBA is nice, all right? During the Shaq era, it was a little bit of a just get a big guy type of situation.
Oh, yeah, but yeah. For sure.
But yeah. Sure. So, like, you know, we touched on your time at Complex, but, like, you know, what's really dope about you now is that you're creating all this extra different types of, you know, you're taking chances on your content, but mm-hmm. What was like your inspiration to starting to get into that lane? Was it from the taking that chance, Complice taking that chance on you, or is it like, where does it stem from?
Yeah, so I think we have to, you know, go back again. Mm-hmm. So before Complex, I invested in a camera. Mm-hmm. But before I invested in a camera, I had a little camcorder that my pops got me for my birthday. Mm-hmm. And I took that to college. I went to Stony Brook University. Mm-hmm. So I had that on campus with me, and I would just document a lot of my dorm mates. Anytime there was like a party or something like that, we would just do dumb shit on the mm-hmm. weekends, mm-hmm. whether it's like crushing beer cans on our heads or something like that. Mm-hmm. I would just document it. And, you know, I had the camcorder. So I had a little experience on how to like shoot with the camera, mm-hmm. but I never really had the knowledge of how to edit a video. And back then, obviously, editing software wasn't as good as it is now.
No, it's terrible back then.
Right. and of course, computers back then weren't as quick or fast as they are now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you do try to edit something, it takes forever to render. So, you know, I taught myself a little bit of Final Cut during college. Mm-hmm. And then once I graduated, I still had that itch in me to kind of make videos, mm-hmm. but it wasn't until Finish Line put out a basketball contest, mm-hmm. and I entered it. And you know, it's called the Fundamentals or something like that. It was the grand prize was, it was all expense paid trip to All-Star Weekend.
Wow.
In New York City, which like didn't really help, right? I was hoping it would be in LA or something like that, where they would actually blow the budget on me, but. I entered that contest. The judges were Mr. Fomer Simpson, mm-hmm. Nightwing, Kick Genius, mm-hmm. and one other person. I forgot who it was, but I ended up winning that contest.
Wow.
And, you know, that creativity got into me when I created that video submission. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of what always lit a fire underneath me. So that initially ignited Life of Complex. Mm-hmm.
Did you go to school for any of this?
I didn't. Everything is self-taught.
Damn.
So if I didn't know something, I would just look it up on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I do this? But obviously, when you're looking up stuff, you don't know the proper terms for it, right?
Right.
Like, yo, what is that effect that does this thing and that thing? So then you go to Google first, type in like something similar to like what you're describing, mm-hmm. and most likely it'll give you like some type of keyword, or you'll go to some type of forum where they say, oh yeah, that's this transition. Mm-hmm. And then you type that transition into YouTube, and then it'll just show you a tutorial. I'm like, oh, that's how you do it. Mm-hmm. So everything is self-taught. It might take a little bit extra work when you have to like do your own research into how to teach yourself these things. But you know, the motivation was there. And also once you're locked into a project, you're just like, well, I already shot the footage. Now it's like, I can't waste this footage. Let me just like figure it out. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a passion project. And you know, it's just what's instilled in me from my parents. It's just like, hey, if you start something, you got to finish it.
Yeah. I mean, it's life of a immigrant's child.
Exactly.
It's like the soon as you put any effort behind something, it's like, you got to see it through. You got to see it through or else.
Yeah, even if you fail and you mm-hmm. make something terrible, at least you could take that and look back at it and say, all right, I'm not going to do that mm-hmm. this next time around. This is what I learned from that experience. How do I be a little bit more efficient? How do I, you know, cut down the fat? Mm-hmm. How do I, you know, just make it a little bit more entertaining? So, you know, a lot of this is trial and error, like they say. You know, you got to put your 10,000 hours in.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, you put in a ton of hours and I mean, right now, like I said, like there was that one video you just recently put out where the one cool video that I really loved that you showed how to do was that Cheetos Puma video. That was sick. I was like, you're putting mad people on game with this, you know.
You know what's crazy? Yeah. When I do the breakdown of that to the average person, that isn't a video editor, they're probably super impressed. Mm-hmm. But to a video editor, that's very basic. So that just tells you how much more I have to go in terms of like doing really, really dope stuff. Because I follow a lot of accounts that do like crazy After Effects stuff. Mm-hmm. Looking at them like, damn, how do you do that? And I'm more impressed with them. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like a, you know, a hierarchy, right? It's like,
yeah,
you're not into video editing, you're probably thinking like, damn, Tony knows what the hell he's doing. Look at that guy. There's so many steps to just like get that one simple video, you know?
I mean, look, I've worked as a post-production person. I'm video edit all my current stuff right now, and I don't want to do it. So I'm in that other...
I get it, man. I get it. I don't want to do it either. But like, you know, at a certain point, it's just like, you got to like level up your skill set so that you know how to do it. Even if you don't want to do it, you at least have the knowledge so that if your job or your company promotes you where you're overseeing everything, you have to be able to hire the right video editor or animator, and they have to know what they're doing, and you could check them because they could, anybody could just BS themselves into a job, right? Mm-hmm. And if you hire the wrong person, then that's on you.
Right.
Your boss is going to look at you like, yo, we gave you the power to hire somebody. You hired this guy. Yo, I don't know, man. You're not delivering. We're going to have to let you go. You're like, well, it ain't me. It's this guy.
So, you get dragged out the office.
What did you say?
I said you get dragged out the office like, it was him.
I mean, hey, man, sometimes you got snitched. No. Okay. Again, the older I get, the more I realize like knowledge is power, and it's also really, really cool to be smart. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously have a little swagger and also be smart. That's the perfect combination. But you know, when we were in high school, we didn't really care about the books. All we wanted to do was just have fun, just mm-hmm. chill, be with girls, right? But then as you get older, you're starting to realize that, damn, I wish I was smarter. I wish I knew how to get ahead of the game. Yeah. I wish I was making these big bucks like the higher ups, right? So, you know, it all comes full circle.
I mean,
kids, if you're listening to this, man, hit the books.
Yo, facts. It's wild because New York instills this crazy hustler mentality that it's like, I recently tweeted today too. It was like, you know, the phrase that I've been saying to myself a lot recently, it's like, be a jack of all trades for yourself, but be the master, be great at one thing for everybody else. Because if you're known as like the best, say, video editor, then you are known as the best video editor. You can do all this extra stuff of like, yo, I can do, you know, I could host something, or I could make music, or I can do that. You can do that on the side. Right. But if you're like literally the best video editor for your company and you just keep moving up, then you will be known as that. You know, I don't know if you believe in the same thing, because I think there's a lot of people that be like, Joe, just do everything all the time.
Nah, I mean, look, if you do everything and you're not compensated for everything, then you're screwing yourself.
That's true.
Because once somebody finds out that you could do everything, they're going to milk you. That's just the name of the game, man. I hate to say it. Unless you become your own boss and you reap all the rewards, then yeah, it's sometimes good to not show all your cards.
That's so true. And I think us as like New Yorkers don't really understand that, right? I think it's everybody's trying to get like, I feel like everybody's trying to juke and move everything, every single thing. And when you see like somebody come in who is a higher up or whatever, and they're from out of town, they're from a small town or whatever, and they went to school, did the whole 8 years in college, and now they're the CEO of the company. It's like, how'd you get there? And it's just because they're like, I just did my one thing extremely well to the point that now I'm running everything. Like,
you know, I want to believe that, but most likely is not true. A lot of it has to do with timing too.
True.
Right. Right place, right time.
I've seen
a lot of people jump the ranks mm-hmm. at certain companies just because right time, right place. Perfect example is if somebody leaves the company and they're looking around, man, we need to fill this spot, but we don't want to hire outside. We want somebody. I see the thumbs up.
You stay giving the thumbs up.
We don't want to hire outside. We have to, you know, promote somebody internally. If you're the only one there, you might get a bump up. You get bumped up. You have that title now. Now you're learning on the go. You probably don't have any experience filling that role, but you're learning on the job. Once you learn that skill set, you start hiring people underneath you. The team starts performing well. You get promoted. So then you're skipping ranks, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, another person could be really, really talented at that job, but they're stuck at a company that just doesn't promote them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right place, right time. But again, at the end of the day, work has to be put in. No one's going to give you a free ride to the top. So, you know, a little bit of luck, but also put in a lot of work. Yeah, you'll get places for sure.
Also networking. I think if your biggest strength is networking, you'd probably soar up faster as well. Because I've seen it. I've seen some of people talk their way into CEO of something. And I was just like, what? Who? How?
But then, you know, sometimes like, yeah, sure, you might have that CEO role, but your team might not respect you. Mm-hmm. Right? The whole company's probably just looking at you like you're an idiot. Like, man, how did you get up there, man? Like whoever hired you, whoever promoted you is probably no longer with the company. They're probably just like chilling, living life lavishly, and we're stuck here with you because you just happen to be the right place, right time, and you just, you know, good talker.
Yeah. Yo, you know? Facts.
There's many different situations, right? Or they could just be really good at talking, and then eventually they learn how to become a really good CEO. Mm-hmm. You never know.
Yeah. Look. Business is always going to be business. But my biggest thing is like, once you figure out you can bet on yourself, and that can be in a corporate setting, or that can just be like, you know, you betting on yourself by like, you know, doing something that you're passionate about. Like I'm doing with this podcast, like Tony's doing with his videos. Like it's something that I feel like pays more in terms of just like, your experience goes twice fold because you're going to be kept in a box for years as you try to like maneuver and figure out the corporate setting when you can do something that you're passionate about and then try to build up on top of that. Like, you know, one thing that's, I guess, the unknown is that when you keep doing something that you're passionate about and see everybody sees your passion, people are going to look at you and be like, all right, let's bring him in. Cause he's doing all this stuff. He could do all this stuff for us. And then you get that double side of being able to do your passion for work, you know, that pays more, in my opinion. It may not pay like, you know, money wise, but it'll definitely pay more fulfillment wise.
I think people can definitely see effort and people being proactive. That's for sure. It doesn't go unnoticed. So if you're grinding now and you're not getting the views, you just never know who's watching. All you really need is that one right person in the right position of power to see your work, and they reach out or you reach out to them, and you know an opportunity could come about. You just never know. So, but you know when you do reach out or they do reach out, they would like to see a catalog of stuff you've done in the past. Mm-hmm. You can't just have one video and expect like, oh yeah, let's work. No, they want to see a portfolio of stuff that you've done, even if it's like not the best stuff, but at least the work ethic is there, right? The potential is there.
Do you have an example of like something that you put out that led to something else?
I think a lot of my social videos that I've done get circulated around. So, you know, when I initially started going independent and started making more creative, a little bit more social friendly or flashy or highly elevated, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, types of reels. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that certain brands would reach out and say, oh yeah, why don't you do something for this campaign that we have coming up? Mm-hmm. We'll pay you this much. We just expect like a reel out of you, and we'll give you free reign to do like whatever you want to it. Just hit these bullet points and then let's rock. Mm-hmm. So the Trade Block one was the most recent one.
Yeah.
He reached out to me. And obviously the March Mania campaign is currently going on right now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's one example.
I mean, shout out Sock Jig. Everybody should go do that up. I still have to do my bracket, but it's like, it's really cool that this is leading on to other cool things as well. You know, like it, like I said, like I love your videos. I think that, well, I love that you explain your videos also so that everybody else gets game, you know, and, you know, it's like this perpetual cycle of people who expand their game and then still talk about sneakers or like use it for something else. Like, I think that it feeds itself and, you know, that's that, like, you got to bring in that love to get more love to in, back into something that everybody feels is loveless now.
You know, it's crazy. It actually takes a lot more work making a behind the scenes
video. Oh yeah, for sure.
And it actually does making the actual video. I feel like, who's that guy who always like records himself in like
Target? I don't know his name, but I know he's
talking, or something like that.
I can look it up right now. Hold on. Andy Wells.
Yo, imagine him making a behind the scenes video of how he makes his video. Mm-hmm. Oh man, like him setting up the tripod and then walking into screen and then walking out.
Drew Wells,
yeah. It's just so much more work, man. But you know, I'm glad that people enjoy it because you know, it's a lot of effort put into it. Just trying to give out free game. I'm trying to give game, but it's making it so difficult because it's so much work to make it like a nice informative piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, in the long run, it's to help somebody, but also it's to hone my own craft. Mm-hmm. Can I be a good storyteller? Can I explain this clear enough where, you know, there's no questions about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, I think you're a great storyteller. And so I'm going to ask you another question. And this is a question that I usually end the podcast with. And that question deals with a little bit of visualization. Okay. I want you to think back to when you were about to get those Air Uptempo 97s. Yes, I had it right. And I just psyched myself out. and, you know, now you're you behind your younger self as they're about to open that box. What would you tell your younger self?
You should have gotten a half size bigger.
But they didn't have it.
They didn't have it. You know what? I probably would have said, keep those shoes dead stock. Because mm-hmm. you probably would have kept it all the way to now. If you wore the Fila shoes first, mm-hmm. You probably would have beat those up, and then by that time, your foot would have gotten too big for those Air Max Uptempo 97s. And, you know, knowing immigrant parents, they don't like to throw out, like, brand new stuff. Mm-hmm. They probably would have kept it in the box, underneath the bed, all the way until, I don't know, however many years and until it crumbled apart. But yeah, that's probably my initial thoughts that I would tell my younger self. But you know, if we want to go like the super, like, I don't know, future seeing mm-hmm. advice, I probably would have said, hey, you're going to get into the sneaker footwear industry and you're probably going to make dope content. So start earlier. You know, maybe your career trajectory will jump faster. I don't know.
Yeah,
who knows, man? Who knows?
Listen, you're our a rising star.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know.
You're killing it right now, Tony.
Well, I appreciate it, man.
Let everybody know where to find you because we didn't go over who you are. And we just jumped right in.
Well, if you made it to the end of the podcast, my name is Tony Mui. You can find me on all social media platforms. At Mr. Tony Mui, that's MrTonyMui. I'm pretty transparent. I try to respond to all the comments, any interactions. I try to, but obviously, when you're making content, time flies when you're in the edit bay or when you're recording. So, you know, I don't blame you if you don't respond to everybody because at the end of the day, you got to have some type of work-life balance. And that is critical in terms of preserving your sanity. So, you know, I want you to be, you know, invested in your own content, but also take time to take a break, because you know, this YouTube game, this content game is relentless. So, you know, just be happy at the end of the day, because, you know, life is bigger than content.
Yeah, facts. And trust me, I take maybe too much time away. Because I don't
find the right balance, man.
For real. Yo, thank you so much, Tony, for jumping on. And for everybody out there, you know, we say each week, wear your kicks. Peace.